Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. How did I
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Let's hang out.
Let's hang out.
And let's talk about what lesbians have found.
Let's hang out.
And let's listen to two lesbians shout.
Let's hang out.
Let's hang out.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Les Hang Out, the podcast that's here to show you what makes a woman so delicious.
And what is that?
I am so sorry, everyone. From the West Coast, I'm Lee Holmes Foster.
And from the East Coast, I'm Ellie Brigida. To those of you who have been with us through this whole journey, thank you as always for listening. And if you're a new listener, welcome. We're excited to have you here. And here's what's happening this week.
This Week in the Lesdom is a place where we can touch base each episode about things going on with the podcast or otherwise. And we want to remind you that we do have a Patreon for The Flame. It's at patreon.com/theflamemusical. We have so many high goals for this musical. And so we want to thank everyone who contributed to our pink start. We do need more funds to do a virtual live table read, fly the cast out for a launch party, maybe do a season 2. I know we're thinking far ahead, but we really need support for those things. And in return for that support, you will get early access to the songs. So we already have 2 songs out for early access, one sung by Chelina Kennedy and one by Jesse Nowak. And I think you're going to love both of them. So you can check that out at patreon.com/theflamemusical. We also have our Haunting of Hill House and Bly Manor trivia. So it's going to be both combined. That's in April 22nd and April 25th. You can find that on our Eventbrite and our Facebook page. We will be attending Klexicon in 2 weekends. We will be hosting trivia on Friday and doing a flame panel on either Saturday or Sunday. We will keep you updated. We will also be attending the LGBTQ Families and Influencers Summit, which is May 22nd and 23rd through the Pride and Joy Foundation. We will have more information about that as well in the greater Les universe. We have some sad series finale news. Winona Earp will be having their series finale this week. It is quite bittersweet. We are so grateful for the entire Winona Earp team and the representation we've truly gotten with that show. We know that whatever projects they go on to, they always have support with us and with our family. So we just want to say a thank you. And our hearts go out to all of you who are enjoying the series finale. That's what's happening this week. Back to you, Ellie and Lee.
Thanks, Ellie and Lee. And welcome everyone to episode 16 of season 4, our next installment of Les Essentials.
Les Essentials is a recurring segment on the show where we dive into classic lesbian movies or TV shows.
And as a reminder, we are also writing and recording an original song for each Les Essentials movie or show that we talk about, including for today's episode. We will have a song at the end. Stick around for it. It is called Losing Control.
And you know lesbians love losing control, especially when they meet a woman. A straight woman. And for this Les Essentials,
a matching soul to their soul.
A twin flame. And for this Les Essentials, we are talking about the 2010 Nicole Kahn film, Elena Undone.
Ah, 2010. Good Lord. Yesterday, wasn't it?
It was. I say 2010 because I feel like we have to discuss the significance of the film for the time that it was written and created.
Oh, yeah.
It
places itself so specifically in time, too, you know?
Yes. Yes. So let's talk about the film. What is our IMDb synopsis?
Oh, here we go. IMDb synopsis for Elena Undone is as follows. Fate brings 2 diversely different women together and sets them on a collision course that will shatter their preconceived notions about love, life, and the power of one's soul.
Isn't that beautiful?
Wow.
Fate, souls, collisions,
love, life.
I I do just want to say...
It's like the intro to the L Word.
Yeah. Loving, 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 loving. That's loving, loving is what we all talk about. That's the part of the L Word theme song we all hook on to. But I do love, like, I say, like, okay, let's talk about how it's in 2010. Let's talk about... I also feel like there's a lot of themes in this film that we see repeated in other films. And one of the reasons that I wanted to do this movie as a Les Essentials rather than some other movies that talk about these themes, the themes being like coming out later in life or falling in love completely unexpectedly and you can't control it, like you're just viscerally in love with this person, is that I do feel like Elena Undone does this pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
in the context of films that have this storyline. So I'm excited to talk about it. I know we'll talk about more of the themes later, but we're going to start with a quick plot recap. And when I say quick, we'll see how quickly
we can. We know, we say that a lot, right?
I'll see how quickly we can do this. We can do this. So our film starts with Solemetry.
Solemetry.
Solemetry. So what is Solemetry, Lee?
It is a science question mark, a study question mark,
of souls.
An opinion of souls.
Of souls. I'm interested. I'm like, quick plot recap, but let's talk. What do you think about this whole thing? So we start, right? We have Solemetry. We have twin flames. We have the introduction of soulmates. What do you think of all that, Lee? As you are saying,
look,
science, opinion?
Here's the thing. As someone who deeply believes that, like, I, like, had that Kelsey turning around in a room and, like, vision narrowing to just her experience, I also, at the same time, am like, oh, God, yeah, tell a bunch of lesbians that, like, passion means that that's their soulmate. Like, that's a good idea. Can't end badly.
Valid. Well, I think, too, you can have a twin flame and not have your twin flame be the person you end up with. Like, you know, because, like, I love all this romantic bullshit. But it's bullshit. But I do, like, I love all
I
this.
I love this shit. It's for me.
I just love, I do love all of the idea of soulmates. I think for me, I'm like, you have multiple soulmates in your life and they serve different purposes. And so I think you still can say, okay, there's a twin flame who does ignite all of this passion inside of you. However, maybe that's not your healthiest long-term relationship.
Are you my podcasting twin flame, Ellie?
Yes, okay. We are.
In podcasting, one and one are one.
Are one. One and one are les one. No, but so we start with this whole thing of Solemetry, and that is a big theme of the film. We're talking about what it means to find your twin flame. And I actually did listen to a little bit of the director's commentary, the director and writer Nicole Kahn's commentary, and she really wanted to set this up in that way because she wanted the audience to, like, every time there's a new bullet point of, like, you know, we start with your twin flame, you'll meet in an unexpected way, you'll feel familiar, all these other things, right, about the twin flame. She wanted the audience to hear that and also be sort of doing, like, a checklist of their own relationships, or have you met that twin flame? What would it feel like to see that? So I do think they do a pretty good job of introducing the general themes we're going through.
Is Solemetry something that was invented for the movie? Is it something that existed pre the movie? Does it say anything in the commentary?
So I'm pretty sure that Solemetry is a real thing. And it actually was a big reason that Nicole wrote this film, because you know that this is based on a real story.
Yes. Well, I know it's based on real things, and I wasn't sure, like, how much of it, because I'm assuming all of the little interim stories that they give you, like all the other couple stories. I was assuming those are like real couple stories and stuff.
Yeah, so those are all real couple stories. And then the main story of Elena
is a real story.
And Peyton is the story of Nicole and Marina, who is, I'm not sure if they're still together, so I don't want to, but it's the real life story of Nicole Kahn and Marina Rice Bader. Nicole talks about how she was getting over a divorce. So in the film, we get introduced to both of these characters, right? We get introduced to Elena and we get introduced to Peyton. Mm-hmm. Peyton is Nicole Kahn. And in real life, Nicole was getting over a divorce. That was what she was grieving, not the death of her mother. And Marina was married to a very religious conservative man. He was not a pastor, mm-hmm. but so like she upped the ante on some things.
Yeah.
But it's pretty much is their story. And Nicole truly does believe they are twin flames.
Interesting. And, I mean, yeah. The concept of it I love. And because I think you're right that like they're, I like the idea that like your twin flame does not necessarily mean it's the person that is the best person for you mm-hmm. in a relationship, which I find interesting. But I also think that there is also something to be said for like, I mean, I think everyone has had that experience of just like meeting someone, whether it's romantic or not, where you just like feel like you've known each other.
Yeah.
Like feel comfortable and feel like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think they said, you know, it's everything feels new yet familiar.
Yeah.
And that,
I love that.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Right. I mean, that's not. Yeah. That's how you can feel with a lot of people that I'm also like, maybe it's also just me. I'm like, I feel like I have so many soulmates in this life just because like I truly do feel like I meet a lot of people that I'm like, I feel like I have known you forever. And I do like that idea of like platonic soulmates. I really feel like I have a lot of platonic soulmates, like. Just,
I'm sorry, what you mean is just me. I'm very special and important. Thank you.
Sorry, okay. Lee.
Great.
Just you.
Wow, just like really like dimming my twin flame there.
No, but there are different types of soulmates. Not
there are.
The twin flame is one, and there are other types of soulmates. So you're my platonic twin flame, which is like the ultimate, you know?
Oh,
so,
okay, great. I'll take it.
Yeah.
NBD, as long as I'm the ultimate one, that's
yes,
fine.
The ultimate. So we do start setting the scene in the film. We set the scene that Elena is the pastor's wife. The pastor.
Yeah, really, really upped that ante.
They
huh?
really did.
Pastor Barry.
Pastor Barry. Also, can we talk about Pastor Barry for a minute?
Wait, if we're going to talk about how we meet Pastor Barry, can we talk about the moment of Pastor Barry coming into the room and seductively asking if she's ovulating? Because, whew, Pastor Barry, what a
Pastor
moment.
Pastor Barry does not have any game whatsoever.
No, zero negative game.
No.
It's just, and I love how you can tell Elena's just like, wow, I am super not into this, but like, yeah, I'm ovulating. Come yeah. and get some. And she's like, please don't touch me.
Like, well, and I think that's why I'm saying I feel like they really do such a good job of setting us up for this, because like there's this scene where it's juxtaposing her Elena having sex with her husband. And it's like clearly she's like literally limp. Like, she is not.
It was giving me, it was hardcore flashbacks to Jenny and Tim.
Yes. Like, she is not moving at all. She's just like, all right.
My PTSD from season one of The L Word was touched on in that scene.
Later in our outline, I mean, we can talk about this now, but I needed to pull together a timeline of lesbian film and TV. Just because, like, this is so, yeah, like I said, this is so 2010. The L Word came out in 2004, and mm-hmm. I do feel like there are influences of the L Word in this, in a good way. I especially the sex scenes. I'm a big fan of the sex scenes in this film. We will get
but
to
the them. Style it's done in and the music yeah. choices and the, oh yeah, very much so. I can
like,
see that
the swimming pool scenes.
Yes,
like I yep. like all of this. Like Elena and Peyton like could be in the L Word universe. Like, I just feel like they fit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But you have this juxtaposition of, like, this So you have this painfully practical heterosexual sex scene going on. And then you also have, I think, like going back and forth between Peyton swimming in the pool.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, water. We've talked about rebirths before.
Yes, we have. We sure have. Willfully dunking yourself in a full pool of water. I see you, Peyton.
Yes. So I feel like it's like, it is very, the movie itself is very cinematic.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really interesting shots. Yeah, I like it.
Well, and we get this important cultural, like historical time frame too with Millie's character, right? Millie's one of the people at the church, and she keeps talking about like going to all of these protests. They're protesting gay marriage. They're like, it's very much in this, like, you know, like it was probably filmed like right after the whole Prop 8 thing. Like, it's like a very specific era of time that this whole story like kind of exists in, you know?
Yes. And I think like, yeah, oh God, the like the juxtaposition of Millie and Elena. But one of the things that I really do like about this film in that, yes, we have talked about like the repressed straight woman and the like established lesbian character and how sometimes that can be a bit problematic. But one of the things I do like about this is that from the beginning, we know that Elena is not against gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Like Elena herself has her own thoughts and feelings about the LGBTQ community. Like she won't go to the protests. She will not participate in all of this anti-LGBTQ things. We even see there's this scene where they're at the party, and this is a little later in the synopsis, but it's painfully uncomfortable and also beautiful.
Oh, God.
When she's like, oh, I love, I'm fine with it. I love gay people. I voted yes on Prop 8 or no, whichever one was the good one. That's what I did.
The good one. I voted the right way. Yeah. Oof. What a conversation.
And I mean, there's clearly some internalized, right? There's some internalized homophobia in Elena,
yeah,
which is clearly why she hasn't come out at this point in her life. But I do like at least that the homophobia is mostly external. Elena is not like a self-hating lesbian or queer person.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting how they position Pastor Barry in all of this, you know, because it's like Pastor Barry is not the one who's like kind of coming down with like the hammer on this whole like, but the gays and like, you know, we have to pray for them and go pro. Like it's really Millie who's the driving force in that, which I also think is like an interesting choice to have not had that be the role that he plays in this. You know, like you can tell he kind of changes tune as he realizes some things happening in his marriage a little, but it's like he's kind of always played as like a pretty like meh about the whole thing, but he has people in his congregation that he feels like he has to cater to, you know? Yeah.
And I mean, to be fair, I'm like, he still is catering to them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just, I thought it was interesting that it's like, it's never played as being like something that comes strongly from like his own sense of like
morality,
convictions on the issue and everything. Yeah. It's like very much like he's being prodded in that direction, you know? I just thought it was an interesting choice.
Yes. Understand that. Yes, but we do meet Millie. When we're setting the scene for Peyton's character, we also meet Wave, who there's just so many, like that's what I'm saying. There's so many pretty stereotypical lesbian things in this film. But I do feel like they are setting some interesting precedents, like we do have established lesbians, and we also have an established lesbian who's not part of this like main ship, right? We have lesbians who are friends with other lesbians. Yay! So and when I was listening to the commentary, Nicole was saying, you know, Wave, which is also short for Waverly. Isn't that interesting? So we got another, you know, little weird little shout out. But
down Nicole, the lesbian rabbit holes we go.
So many rabbit holes. But Nicole said she really wanted Wave to be, you know, that voice of the lesbian community, the voice of the LGBTQ community, basically saying, like, that external force that's saying, hey, like, you know, this isn't, like, you shouldn't be going for this straight woman.
Yeah.
You shouldn't
That's the big red sign that we all wish we had sometimes, going, alert, alert,
exactly.
Abort mission.
Exactly. Like, you know, this probably won't end well for you. Like, do you think you should do this? And so I do think Wave plays a really important part in the film because she is that voice of reason and that, like, alternate perspective. So we're not getting that, like, oh, like that, like, queer woman and straight woman, and, like, you're just supposed to buy in, like, this is how it is always with every gay relationship, right? Peyton has had relationships before Elena. Peyton was even married for 6 years, we find out. And Wave goes through women. I don't know what she says, like, socks in a drawer. I also do really, I love the actress. I think she does a great job. She's so funny. She's just so funny. And then we also, well, we met Tyler at the beginning, but we get to meet Tyler more in the perspective of how he is connected to everyone, more so than just setting up the scene for Twin Flames.
Tyler's a funny character, too. He's like the GBF with a wife, which I just think is hysterical. I don't know why it cracks me up so much to, like, introduce a character that you know is like, playing as gay, reading as gay, talks about how he reads as gay, and is like, but here's my wife. Baha, Twin Flames, so funny.
I was also crying when he was like, who would have ever thought I would be with a high-powered businesswoman? Or any woman.
I know, right? I just thought it was hilarious.
I mean, I love it. I just love how self-aware it is. It's like that Tyler as a character is comic gold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just love that, like, he also is a sounding board. He's like, he's the person who believes so truly in true love. So he is the person who can be happy for Elena when she is obviously going through a lot of turmoil about being madly in love with Peyton, but also happy about it. It's like,
I love how we're, you know, if we talk about Wave being the, like, abort, abort kind of friend, I just love that they make Tyler be the kind of friend who's like, I know that you're married, but your husband is like a slice of stale toast on a hot summer day. Have you considered someone better?
Like, literally.
He is so into convincing her to, like, fall in love with anybody else. And I'm like, this is hilarious to me. He gives no shits about a ring on that finger. He is like, nope, just, I feel someone coming into your life.
Yeah, he's like, somebody, you'll finally be in love. And she's like, I've been married for 15 years.
Oh my God. It is so funny. And I'm like, how long have they been friends and how long has he been just, like, shitting on her marriage left and right at every opportunity?
Not surprised. Not surprised. Oh my God. Yeah, so Tyler is a great character. Love him. So we've set up all of most of our characters. I think the other two characters that we haven't talked about yet are Tori and Nash.
I love them.
And I love them as well.
I just love them.
They're so sweet. And it is really nice that they sort of, I do like this concept that really runs through this film of the twin flames. And I know, Lee, like, you think it might be a little cheesy. That's okay. It is cheesy.
But it's not that I'm not into the cheesiness. It's just that, yes, I know it.
Yes, it's quite cheesy. But they do a good job of having a lot of different types of couples. And yeah, one of those couples that we see are Tori and Nash, who we have established are twin flames who met in high school.
And it's adorable. And they're so
sweet,
cute.
And they really do, like, the acting in the film is one of, I think, its biggest strengths.
Yeah.
All of the actors have really great chemistry with each other. Tori and Nash have great chemistry with each other. You sense this familiarity between the two of them.
Well, and you sense this familiarity that, like, you buy their relationship, but they still read very much as high schoolers, which I kind of enjoy. You know, it's not like they try to cast them as, like, they're high schoolers who are wise beyond their years. Like, no, they're high schoolers who are teenagers who are just like in love, and it's adorable.
And they are just very comfortable with each other. And I just like that about them.
Plus, this is like a little completely like besides the point. But I also love that like Elena and Pastor Barry both seem to just have accepted that they're like, and this is your girlfriend who is like part of the family and like basically and, lives, like, with,
lives
them.
With us.
And like, yeah, I don't know. They just seem like very chill about the whole situation again in a way that like I just think is a refreshing choice for like a pastor in a movie, you know, who's not being like, bah, chastity, lock it down, don't touch girls, girls are the devil and sin, bah. Like, he's just kind of like, yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's your girlfriend.
I like it.
It is.
Tori herself is just an icon. Mm-hmm. And Tori is used to talk about this one thing that Nicole Kahn talks about. It's called sleep waking. And she talks about it in this way. What is it, a snail? How like snails are asleep for half of their lives. And she's like, imagine waking up one day and realizing you've been asleep for half your life. And you're like, oh, foreshadowing. But I think like it is such an interesting plot device to use Tori as like talking about the themes and stuff like that. But it, and I think like, I mean, we've had episodes before talking about late bloomers, and like it does seem like it is that like waking up.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Like you've and been, it, yeah.
Like I know that we have talked about, you know, is that going to have come out by the time this comes out?
I think it comes out after this.
It comes out right after this? Okay. And I think we have an episode coming up that Ellie and I have already recorded that's all about actually kind of digging into the trope of cheating on our husbands. That comes up here as well. But I do, you know, I mean, look, we're never going to rag on, like, the concept of late bloomers. Like, this is a real story. People come out like this, you know?
Yeah.
And I do think that it's a really well done version of that trope, you know?
Yes. I do think it is very well done. Like,
yeah.
And I know we are going to have an episode about this, but after watching this film again, I was thinking a bit more about that because it still does like get to me in a grating way of the cheating, of course.
Hear more of our thoughts in 2 weeks.
However, it's the depth to which you see the relationship between Elena and Peyton feel real, feel developed before the cheating starts. I feel like there are a lot of other films where they're just like, I met this lesbian at a party once and then we hooked up in the bathroom. Oh, wait, the L word. But like, you know what I mean? Like, literally, it was like we... And of course, let's talk about Elena and Peyton meeting.
Yes.
When Elena,
let's get into some of these two together because I do love them. I love the actresses together in this movie. Like,
the chemistry for these two actresses is some of the best I have seen in any film I have ever seen. I would really like go to bat for that. But yeah, I mean, we do see this attraction, this uncontrollable attraction between the two of them. They meet at the adoption center where Peyton is trying to get approved to adopt as a single mom. And Elena is trying to see if they can adopt because she's having trouble conceiving.
And Pastor Barry.
Yeah, of course. This was really interesting to me because Nicole also said this is exactly how they met. Her and Marina.
Awesome.
At
amazing.
An adoption center. And it was because Nicole was looking to adopt another preemie baby. Her son was born prematurely. And so she had seen in the ICU all of these other babies who were born prematurely and didn't have homes to go to. And she really wanted.
Okay, don't tell me that. I'm literally about to like drive to the hospital right now.
I know.
Just give me a baby. I will take the baby home. It's okay.
I know. It is very sad. But I do like, I love that that's how they meet. Because like I said, it feels so real. It feels deeply emotional. These are two women who have a lot of love to give, who are very maternal, who care about having a family. and they meet because of their deep love for having a family. And they recognize something in each other, right? And it feels more intimate. It feels less tawdry, let's say.
Yeah. Well, and you know what else is? Yeah. What else is interesting about it? Because they meet at the adoption center and then they sort of re-meet again at Tyler's Celemetry event. What I think is interesting to me about both of those encounters, and again, which, like, you know, I think you and I both are, like, super hardcore, like, stan these actresses in this movie.
I love them
what I
so
like
much.
About it is what I find interesting, and what I think I can't think of a lot of other instances that do this well, is their dialogue is not overly smooth or familiar or whatever. Like, the dialogue is written like two people who don't know each other.
Who just met each other, yeah.
Who are meeting for the first time, and especially at the Celemetry thing, who are having that super awkward discussion being like, I think gays are A-okay, haha. And it is awkward, right? Like, the dialogue itself, yes. Like, what is being said is that kind of weird sort of feeling each other out, stilted conversation that you have with someone that you're just meeting. But at the same time, they somehow manage to still sell an instant, like, familiarity and comfort and ease and chemistry with each other that, like, it's interesting. It's really interesting to watch that and to, like, contrast, like, the out loud parts with the, like, not out loud parts.
Yes. They do really great with the not out loud parts.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. We do stand these actresses.
They're really good in this. They're great.
It really is. It's very
well, and it's, and I think sometimes that's the part that's, you know, I mean, yeah. Look, like, I'm not gonna say every example is as bad as, like, Katherine Heigl and Jenny's Wedding.
But
that as the extreme opposite end of, like, someone who just cannot in any way convincingly make you believe that they have any attraction or chemistry with their romantic lead. Like, this is at the far other end of that spectrum. And it's nice, you know?
It is. It's lovely.
Oh, Katherine Heigl.
Especially, too, when you have, I mean, it is a well-shot film. It's a well-acted film. But it is a low budget film.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, especially when you have that, chemistry is everything. When, like, you don't
Yeah, it'll
have,
make up for a lot, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So it is. It's amazing. So yes, they do. They meet at the adoption center and then they meet again at the Celemetry event, which just Tyler is also, like, pushing them together.
Tyler's, like, booking them a damn honeymoon suite just about. He is unstoppable.
I
love it.
Oh my god.
No shame, that man.
Yes,
no shame.
No shame at all. And they are, like, continuously trying to find reason. Like, they didn't expect to see each other at the Celemetry event, to be fair. But they are continuously trying to find excuses to see each other again. Which I'm also like, you women. Just, like, we're just really good friends.
And then besties.
Then we have, like, the most intense love montage.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Ever seen.
Here's the thing that the one thing that I will say about this movie that I still laugh about is I cannot for the life of me get any handle on how much time passes through any portion of movie. Not a single clue. Like, as far as I know, this could all be like the fastest U-Haul in history, or she could have been cheating on her husband for like 8 months. Like, I have no idea, because there's a lot of montage scenes that are hard to follow. Because, like, they have some of these montages where, like, the picnic is where is they all go out to a picnic with Peyton and, like, the kids are there and stuff, right?
That scene wrecked me. I was like, the kids were there, right? Like, that is the thing where I'm like, you really are acting like this in front of your children, and I mean your son, but if you think this is normal, you think this is just a friend of yours, and you
well,
are
and how
pretty
long
much...
would it yeah how long would it have to have been for you to feel like that's something that you could play off? You know, like, you can't bring your brand new bestie out with your whole family and be like, this is totally fine, this, you just like fit right in the mix. It's like, that's the kind of thing that I feel like you could get away with when it's like, we've been best friends for 6 months and everybody knows her, and I like, that's why I think the timing of it all I have no real handle on.
I don't either, to be honest, so we'll never know.
If you have thoughts, let us know, tweet at us, and please tell us how long you think this movie takes place over.
Send us the timeline.
Great.
We need to know. But yeah, the picnic scene is a lot. They are touching. They are like just constantly. There's so much gaze.
That smoldering eye contact.
So much eye contact.
Yeah.
That's why I'm like, this is like the blueprint for every like lesbian longing film after this. But like, they did it so well.
Speaking of the eye contact, can we talk about their photo shoot?
The photo shoot is so intense. So yes, let's talk about the photo shoot.
This is like the precursor to the painting scenes in yes. Portrait of a Lady on Fire, right?
Yes.
I'm just gonna fix your hair. Just let me. Why don't you just look over here? This is fine.
Well, actually, wait. It's like super close to that scene,
right?
Because during the painting scene in Portrait of a Lady on Fire, isn't she asking her about the other girls she's painted?
Yeah.
And in the photography scene, Elena
she's like, how do you know? How would you know? How do you know? How do you know if you're a giant raging homosexual?
Also, this reminds me, there's this guy on TikTok who has this whole like series. He keeps saying it in a different way, but he's like, straight people don't think about being gay because they're not gay. Like, and he's like, if you're thinking about being gay, you are.
Who did we just say? That was one of the Spice Girls. Was it like Mel B? Who was it that you just said where you're like, if if you think you might be a lesbian, like, chase your dreams.
Are. Yeah, like Sporty Spice. Like, if you think about, if you think it,
believe in your dreams.
You probably are. But that's what's happening here with Elena, right? She's like, oh, well, how would I really know? Like, you know.
Say you haven't kissed another woman, but, like, you think about it a lot. What would that mean to you?
What would that mean? Say you really just can't stop touching your best friend.
Say your husband makes you want to recoil in disgust, and yet...
Yes. Yeah, so...
What could this possibly mean? Please help me.
We will never know. I love to. I mean, they play the scene so well. Elena is blushing so hard. She destroys her equipment. Like, at a certain point, she's like messing with the lights and the lighting and everything. It's so perfectly done.
Yeah.
The tension between the two of them is just... it's perfect. But yeah, Elena just keeps getting more curious about being gay. There's even, like, there's so many more scenes after that, too, where she just keeps asking Peyton.
Oh, my God.
All about, like, she keeps asking Peyton. She asks Tori. I'm like, oh, so Elena, what are you doing? You're asking your son's girlfriend about the lesbians at her high school? And you don't...
and also, like, tripping over yourself in the like, she isn't that with the scene where she's cooking and she's, yes, like throwing the spoon all across the kitchen and stuff. She's like, lesbians, ha ha, what?
Never heard of them.
Never heard of them. She's so awkward.
Like, so awkward. So yeah, we have a lot of, like, foreshadowing of Elena's journey here. And then finally Peyton gets her big lesbian pants on. And she decides she's going to tell Elena they can't be friends anymore because Elena's straight and Peyton's a lesbian, so they can't be friends.
And also, I want to bone you. I mean, yeah, like, come on.
And if Elena doesn't give the most straight woman in love with a lesbian response she could ever give...
I cannot.
She's like, but I want to give all of me to you.
Don't take you away from me.
Don't,
oh my
take
God,
you away from me.
Like, and Jesus.
She literally says, you can take me. Take me. Take all of me. But just,
girl,
not that.
Get it together.
Like, so
get it together. Pull it together, Elena.
God.
It is a lot. And this is the thing I do love about this scene is, like, Peyton, this casting, like, this scene is so believable of just, like, the absolute useless lesbian who is like, oh, okay.
I know. She's like,
I'm gonna do the right thing. Oh, don't do the okay. Don't do the right thing.
I know,
and you're like, yes.
I'm gonna set boundaries. And then she's like, okay, yeah, they're gone.
Hashtag relatable content right there.
It's so relatable. That whole conversation is so relatable. I'm like, this poor lesbian, but also, like, not this poor lesbian, because she, you know, she said her piece, and I will give it to her. She, communication, she's being honest, she's telling her friend how she feels, and then, you know, it does not take Elena very long. Like, they're on the phone, like,
again,
the
time frame wishy-washy, but
on the phone, and she's like, I want you now. And Elena is very assertive for a first time.
Elena coming out the gate as a top. Here for it.
Long time listener, first time caller. I don't know. that is, like, literally what Elena is. She's like, I've been.
Can we please make a shirt that just says that with no context? And.
Like,
why is that so funny to me?
Because it's literally what she is. She's been, like, planning. She's been planning and plotting this for, like, however long she's known Peyton. In this, we don't know. In this weird time frame. But yeah, she's very assertive. She comes in and she knows what she wants and she just goes for it. And she's clearly been thinking about it a lot because she's like, you taste exactly how I thought you would.
I mean, listen. Listen, that is, whew, Something else, man. To come in with your, like, up against the wall and the husky voice and drop that bomb, like, Jesus, it's, woman.
It is good. I will stand by. I will stand by the intimacy scenes in this film.
I will stand by it, too. This is a well-done sex scene. This is good. It's a great scene.
It is so good.
It is a great scene that, like, it is still dated in that way that, like, absolutely, it harkens back to the L word, the style, the music, the everything. Yeah. The outfits themselves place it in a time frame as well.
We haven't even talked about the outfits. The freaking flannel vest.
the sleeveless flannel over the tight tank top with the bootcut jeans. I mean, look, this is an era unto itself, okay? Like, it is what it is. This is
the length
of a classic look.
The length of time it took her to pull together that outfit as well.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But that, I mean, that's when she told her she had feelings for her. I don't think that's the outfit she's wearing right now.
Oh no, it's probably not.
It's a different one, but still.
But she wears a lot of tight tank tops in this movie.
The jeans are 2010.
Oh, yeah. Very much so.
The jeans, the belt buckle.
Yep. This is a vintage classic look these days, you know? Like, it wasn't at the time, but it is now.
It really is. And
But the outfits aside, the staging, the choreography, the physicality, I'm here for it.
I'm really into it. I will say, too, it was interesting. This is like a continuity thing. Okay, so is this first makeout scene a sex scene? Because there's two things. So we have the scene, it's pretty much all of them making out. Also, fun fact, this scene in 2010 became the longest kissing scene in film history.
Wow.
And they
incredible.
They did it on purpose. Like, they literally Googled, or I don't know
what the longest one was.
What was the longest kiss scene? And they were like, we're going to do.
Wow.
A long.
Imagine being those actresses and getting told that.
Yeah. And to be fair, it is.
An honor.
It is long. Notice that. But that, I mean, first of all, in the era of that we are in right now, that has left me rather unsatisfied when I'm watching queer sex scenes where it's like, we kiss for 2 minutes is not right. We kiss for 15 seconds and it's a blackout and we wake up naked the next morning. And I'm like, where's the scene? This is pretty freaking good.
And that's if you even get the kiss on screen, you know.
True. Oh my God.
A lot of times it's just like, I'm going to soulfully gaze at you as we walk towards the bed and then you fade to black. I mean, yeah.
I can't. But So there's this scene where you mostly just see them make out. Then you have a scene later where Elena says, make love to me, Peyton. And that scene, it seems as though Peyton is saying to her, she says, if we go there, there's no going back. So I think the first scene that we see is just them making out.
But is that like a different day?
I think it's a different day.
Oh, is it? Okay. Maybe I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure it's a different day because they're going over some photos or something.
Again, this is what I'm saying. It's like the whole time frame of how long this affair lasts, very vague to me.
Yeah, it is quite vague. So I'm pretty sure then this scene we get where, you know, we have nakedness, we have lots of touching, lots of slow admiring of each other's bodies.
Elena comes out swinging again.
Yes. No, well, there's three sex scenes.
Sorry, I'm getting them all confused.
Yes, I just watched it today, which is why.
I know, it's fresher in your mind. You're doing better than
really
I am.
I really have those sex scenes in my brain. Do not worry.
I was like, I watched it today, we rewound a couple times. It's fine.
Yes, I watched it today and I watched those sex scenes many, many times. The first scene is them making out where they're going like on the different couches.
Yes, yeah.
The second scene is where she's like, make love to me, Peyton. And we get this like very dramatic, dark, naked scene, lots of touching, it's very artistic.
Is that the I don't want to go back scene?
That's the I don't want to go
back scene. Okay. Yeah. They're clarifying in my mind again.
And then the third big sex scene is when Elena really takes control.
Boy, does she.
And she goes down on Peyton, and we get to experience that from Peyton's perspective. And that scene is... like I'm saying, there's a lot of stuff that I feel like this film set a precedent for.
Yeah.
Like, I think about the sex scene from Black Swan. Like, is very, I think, similar to this, like,
yep.
to this scene where you really see it from the perspective of the person who's receiving the pleasure.
Well, and it's just, there's also something about all of their scenes together, I think, that just, I mean, they, like, you know, I know we joke about hashtag relatable content, but, like, they resonate, I think, with yes. queer audiences. Like, they feel very real, convincing, believable, like... You know, I mean, we've all seen things where you're like, I'm here for it because it's gay, but like, that's not how it goes. Like, it's, but it's, mean, fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
It goes that way for other people, but it definitely doesn't go that way for me. So
I think just in terms of like a broadly general, like, yes. you know, I mean, look, fine. You have your, what's the one where she baby birds her? What's that movie?
I knew you were going to bring up before you even said it, I knew you were going to bring up baby birding.
Of course I am.
And it is disobedience.
Disobedience. Because, look, here's the thing. It's like, yes, we're here for it, and they also had great chemistry and whatever. And I'm not going to say that, like, nobody does that, and if that's your thing, like, we're not here to yuck your yum or whatever. But I just feel like as a thing to pick to be like, ah, this will be relatable for all the lesbians, you're like, that's what you went with?
That's what you
like,
picked?
Is that what you think we all do? Or like, I don't understand.
I mean, there's many. That's the thing. That's why there's the three sex scenes. And I feel like all of them are different and all of them show different types of intimacy between these two women. And yeah. all of them feel relatable.
Yep.
Like that. Yeah. The intense couch makeout. There's like, I know I'm like so dramatically about these sex scenes, but I truly stand by them. I think they're very well done. There's like the, like, you have Peyton on top and she's like thrusting her hips and you're just like, oh, hell yes. Like, this is just like, it's a super lengthy makeout scene. But
yeah.
Like every part of, and that's why I'm saying, like, I'm like, I don't know if it's like a sex scene, because then later we hear, like I said, we hear that, like, make love to me. It seems like it's the first time. And maybe it is the first time they're like very like fully naked and intimate with each other. But there's another scene even later that's a flashback to the couch scene where I'm pretty sure there's like unbuttoning of the pants and the belt buckle. And either...
Which could mean sex or could not. Again, who knows?
Like, I'm not quite sure. But yeah, so either way, it's like a very... It's an intense makeout scene. And I would consider that like a very sexual, sensual scene. So we'll call it one of their sex scenes. But who knows, like, the details of what happened off camera. But yeah,
who knows what went where? That's what we're saying.
Those sex scenes, honestly, were just so good. Also, the timing for that sex scene, because I wrote it down. The first one, that's the longest kissing scene. 3 minutes and 24 seconds.
Wow. That is impressive, actually.
Yeah. So, very impressive.
Well done. Well done, ladies.
So, we have our sex scenes, and then after the sex scenes, this is, like, obviously the culmination.
Yeah. We can do, like, the quick downfall.
Yeah, the quick downfall, because, I mean, at this point, everything that happened before is what we care about. We have the Hawaii trip. We have Elena and Peyton fighting because Peyton does not want Elena to be intimate with her husband, which, like, that whole thing is, like, really, really hard for me to reconcile. And, like, I understand it, but I'm also, like, you realize, like, you're the illicit partner here.
Right.
She's acting like the husband is. But I understand it, right? Like, she feels like her relationship with Elena is if she's intimate with her husband, then, like, what does the relationship mean? But, like, she still has a husband.
But it's also funny because then you're like, okay, look, Pastor Barry, sir, fellas, Fellas, when your wife just suddenly stops having sex with you ever and has a super, super demanding intimate relationship with her best friend.
Yeah, like, you should know what's going
on. Like, maybe take a hint, my man, you know?
Yep. So, Pastor Barry is, like, really, really clueless. And Nash also is very angry at his father that he's clueless because he finds all of these, like, super erotic letters from Peyton to, I mean, they are, from Peyton to Elena. And so Nash knows his mother is sleeping with this woman.
Yeah, Nash put two and two together. Nash put one and one together and got one, I think. That's what happened.
Yeah. So, like, you know, we have all kinds of stuff. Nash acts out. Elena's sort of realizing, oh, this is tearing apart my family.
Yes.
Obviously.
Elena's tower of cards is coming crumbling down around her.
Peyton also is not really happy with the scenario, so she breaks up with Elena. Understandable. And, you know, then that sort of is a catalyst for Elena to reveal all her affair to her husband, stands up for herself, starts this divorce. Then we flash to 6 months later. Do you want to talk about this, Lee?
I feel like this is like my only gripe with this movie, I think. Because it's like, it's heavy-handed at the end here, you know? Like, it is really going for, like, some shock factor and some, like, emotions. And I don't understand it necessarily.
Well, I don't understand why. So you're talking about... So Elena and Peyton run into each other in the park again, and... Surprise, 6 months later, to be fair, Elena is wicked pregnant.
Very pregnant, yeah.
Like, not just, like a month super pregnant. Like, super pregnant.
Yeah.
Like, 6 months pregnant? Question mark?
I mean...
5 months?
They don't really make it clear exactly how far along she is. But yeah, it's like, it's been, like, not a ton of time to be like, I'm getting a divorce. And my gay best friend who's married to a woman is just gonna like throw some sperm at me and like now I'm pregnant with a baby and it's like yeah it's fast,
very
it's
rushed.
Like a lot happened in a very short time and like somehow they didn't like haven't had any contact whatsoever. And it's also like I just, the thing that I think was funny to me is like after a whole movie where like everything felt very believable and very real to me, it seemed weird that you would like run into someone right away. And like, I feel like if you were in that situation where you were like, here's where we left things and here's how I feel about you and here's me now running into you out of the blue with like a giant bump belly thing, like, I just feel like you would immediately be like, I can explain what is happening and it is not what you think. And she doesn't do that. And so I'm just like, why not? Why? Why aren't you doing that? Do that. Say the words. Say the things that you, like, have to know.
Well, she faints. She literally faints.
I know. But that's the thing is it's just, like, it's a little over-the-top dramatic, you know?
It is quite over-the-top dramatic.
It's super dramatic. And it's not like I'm against over-the-top dramatic. It's just, it was like, I feel like a lot of the rest of the movie, I was like, totally, buy it. Yeah, you say that. Sure, you be weird and be like, I think gays are great when you're in that situation. Yeah. I don't necessarily buy that, like, you wouldn't immediately be like, I'm divorced and this is not his baby and I'm just having a baby.
Yeah.
Ha! Like, I don't know. I feel like those would be like the first words out of your mouth, you know?
Yeah, it didn't make a lot of sense. I mean, obviously, like, I do appreciate that they're like, let's give them a happy ending. But I do feel like you could have just had a normal happy ending. Like, you could have had, you know, Elena gets divorced, right? And then she calls Peyton once she's like sort of worked through some stuff and is like, it's over. I love you. I've only ever loved you. And then they have this joyful reunion.
Well, and it's also, it's weird to me that it's like, I have to divorce my husband because I am very clearly gay and in love with this woman. And so, like, I'm going to divorce my husband. And then, pause, gotta get knocked up first.
It makes, like, that's the thing. I'm like, anyone going through a divorce would not be like, hey, right now, while I have filed for divorce and am in the process of getting divorced, you know what would be great? Let me actively have a baby. Like, it's not an accident.
Well, and while in the process of filing for divorce, because I am in love with this one specific human person who is out in the world, like, I don't know, it's just the whole motivation of it feels weird to me. It's like, scary. I don't quite get it. I also don't, like, there was something about, like, again, situations that felt very believable to me through most of the movie, and then suddenly you have these scenes at the end where it's like, I feel like other people are kind of hovering around these conversations that I'm like, I feel like you would be like, okay, I'll be over here, you guys talk, you know? Like, I don't know, I just feel like they have a lot of conversation with, like, Tyler and Wave, like, sitting there, you know? And you're just like, guys, like, maybe
you're
clear,
like, why are you still here?
Clear out a little bit, you know? So, I don't know. I mean, it's like, yes, it's fine. It's cute. I like the happy ending. There was suddenly so many things all at once, like, on top of each other that I was a little bit like, what?
It wrapped up very strangely. Like, I was screaming when I saw her pregnant. I was like, this is not right.
Also, just more examples of film setting unrealistic expectations for, like, how quickly you get pregnant once you start trying. Just throwing that out there. It's fine.
Yeah, it didn't. It was. And that
takes a couple tries on average, okay?
Yeah,
it's not one and done.
Yeah, but I mean, besides the fact that that was so freaking weird, we do have, you know, a nice happy ending, which always appreciate, you know, they're together, they're in love, they've communicated through some stuff, and, you know, from the beginning, they both wanted to have a child, and now they do have a child that they're raising together, and that is very sweet.
But I also
am like, you could have, like, not had that weird pregnancy thing, and you could have just, because Peyton just got approved for adoption as well.
Yeah.
So, like, it could have just been like, okay, they meet up again and Peyton had gotten approved for an adoption and now they're, you know, co-parenting this child together that
right.
Peyton adopted.
Well, and it's like, you know me, ever the practical person, because I'm like, immediately, like, my thoughts were going in so many directions. And I'm like, wait a minute. So, like, you're having this baby that Tyler is the father. Like, is Peyton okay with that? Like, you know you're in love with this woman. You didn't want to, like, have any conversation with her about, like, starting a family. How would you want to do that? Who would be a donor? Are you comfortable having a known donor? Like, any of that stuff? Similarly, what happens with Peyton's adoption now? Because, like, what are you going to do if you move in together? Like, are you, that affects your adoption thing? Like, you can't, like, entering into a wildly new relationship is going to affect your like ability to adopt, like, especially if you have another kid on the way. I'm just like, is that all getting put on hold? Is she okay with that? Like, it just sort of made this big mess at the end of the movie that I was like, wait a minute, I logistically have a lot of we're gonna need some binders, okay?
I need
some binders and some color-coded tabs for us to, like, organize everything together in here, because, like, this is not all actually that easy. Like, no, there's a lot of questions to talk about.
They created a lot of mess. You're correct. When, like, it could have just been wrapped up in a normal rom-com.
Yeah, and it would have seemed rom-com-y and trite and whatever to just be like, oh, we got back together, let's have a baby. Like, yeah. I get it. I get that, like, that's not how, like, clean cut and easy and straightforward life always is. Fine. But it felt like a little unnecessarily complicated. I don't know.
The pregnancy was, like, the weirdest thing that's ever happened. But it's okay.
Let's not overthink it. They end happy and everybody's happy.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. So I feel like we did a pretty good job, I think, actually, of covering most of the things that I wanted to talk about this film. There were a few other things that I actually had not really noticed that I thought were interesting when I was listening to the commentary. And that one of those is that Peyton has OCD. Did you notice that in the film?
It features prominently in the song, Ellie. Come on.
Amazing. So that I thought was really cool to have a character.
There's the whole scene with the silverware. She, like, can't eat her dinner until Wave comes to help her with, like, her silverware because she just keeps having to, like, put it back in the right place.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's some really interesting stuff going on there with layers of Peyton. and working through that. Nicole also said that a lot of the scenes were shot in her house, like her and Marina's actual.
Is Peyton's house her house?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So I thought that was really cool. Another thing that I know I had sort of said before is like I pulled together a lesbian film timeline.
I'm sorry, wait. You can cut this. But like, is that the same house that like her whole story happened in? Because like, how funny would it be to make your actors be like, okay, and then why don't you push her down on this chair here? Yeah,
and this is where we had sex for the first time. So I don't think this is where everything happened.
That just made me laugh so much.
Honestly,
okay.
So funny. I don't think
please
this is
continue.
Where everything happened. I think it's where they live now together.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. So another thing I needed to do because of the time frame of this film is I really wanted to put together like a timeline of a few other like films we've sort of talked about to get an idea of where this film sets.
Yeah.
So first of all, like from Nicole Kahn, her first big lesbian film was Claire of the Moon, which was in 1993. So she had been making lesbian films for a very long time when she made Elena Undone. She even said in some interviews that she was like, I'm done making lesbian movies. But she really wanted to make this film because she was like, I don't want to make any lesbian films except for our love story. Because Marina.
That's cute though.
Yeah. And Marina was, when Marina came out, she was like, why isn't there more lesbian movies for me to watch? And Nicole was like, you know what, honey, I'll make you one.
Aw, I love that though.
I think it's really sweet. I do. I think it's really nice. I had.
So
I had
93 and then, yeah, get us through the what's that we got to place this like we're in the lesbian zeitgeist of the early 2000s. Does this fall?
Yes. So in 1996 was when Bound was made. I had to throw that in there because I do feel like I really like the sex scenes
in
Bound.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, what was the timeline of like when lesbian sex scenes were good? The L Word came out in 2004. So they feel like it makes sense that there's a lot of like callbacks to that. The Kids Are All Right, which Lee and I have chatted about, and you'll hear us talk about it in our next episode, came out the same year as this.
Wow, that was 2010 too?
2010.
Oh, wow. There is a world of difference, huh?
There's a lot of difference right between this like more mainstream film and this low budget lesbian film that's like made by and for lesbians. So I find that really fascinating. And then Blue is the Warmest Color came out in 2013, and I put that on because there was a very long sex scene
indeed
in Blue is the Warmest Color. I'm not sure if it beat the record. I would have to research that, but that was in 2013, and I do feel like there are some hints of Elena Undone. To be fair, I actually really don't like the sex scene in Blue is the Warmest Color. My own personal preference. Sorry, anyone who loves it. And then Carol came out in 2015. And I mentioned Carol because I feel like Carol was the start of...
Yeah, the period piece.
The period piece was the start of more mainstream funding for lesbian films.
Now, a very important cultural touchstone that you missed, though, Ellie. 2015, also the year Jenny's Wedding came out.
Also, Jenny's Wedding. I'm so sorry I missed you.
And just to really, really wrap this all up for us to get, you know, just really tie it all in a pretty knot so that we know where it sits. That's it. Okay.
Thank you for that. I'm so
sorry. You're welcome.
I forgot that. And I just stopped around 2015 because I just wanted, like, you know, 5 years after feels like, you know, there's a lot of other stuff that obviously has happened in the past 6 years of cinema. But I feel like that gives you an idea of where we're placing this film. Also, because we did talk a lot about like the political landscape and like the actual time frame that this was happening, there's a lot of talk about gay marriage. In 2004, gay marriage was legalized in Massachusetts, which was the first state in the United States to legalize gay marriage. This comes out 6 years later. And then in 2008, Prop 8 was passed, which they talk about in the film. I'm guessing it's set in California because obviously they talk a lot about that. So that's 2 years before this film came out. And then gay marriage was legal across the entire United States in 2015. So
2015 is when they repealed DOMA. Yeah.
Yeah, when Carol came out.
When Carol came out and Jenny's Wedding.
Carol and Jenny's Wedding came out the same year they repealed DOMA.
Yes. DOMA, which was passed in like way back in like 96 or something. So DOMA was passed a while back, and then that's what was repealed in 2015.
Yes. So that's our timeline. And,
that's when we all didn't have to do the clusterfuck of our taxes anymore. It was a tremendous year.
That was when, I remember when that happened, I was on Cape Cod for the summer, and my girlfriend was living in New York, and I drove from Cape Cod to New York.
Did you?
For that night. Yeah, because I was like, this is so exciting.
I want
to be gay tonight.
It was the first year, the year Kelsey and I moved out to California, and it was our first Pride, and it was pretty close that it got repealed. It was like,
yeah, it was over the summer.
Yeah, it was over the summer, and so it must have happened like the week or 2 weeks before our first San Francisco Pride out here, and DOMA gets repealed, and then you have Pride, and it was, yeah, that was
bananas.
A fun year.
Incredible. But yeah, so I thought it was really important to like give the cultural and the historical context of 2010.
Always important. We need to know where to place those tight tank tops, okay?
It's very, very important. I also wanted to talk about, before we wrap up, our documentary couples, because we didn't really talk too much about them.
Sure.
So what did you think of the documentary couples, Lee?
Oh, they're all cute. I mean, you know me. I'm a sucker. I'm a sucker for the stories. I'm here for all of them. They're all adorable.
I love them. They're so cute. My favorite were the nun and Jackie. I don't know the nun's name, but I just remember her talking about Jackie. I just thought they were so sweet.
They are cute. I think my favorite are the first ones, the two dudes with like the, like, they were in school together, and then he like sees them at an airport, and I was like,
oh, I know. They were
cute.
So sweet.
I love it.
But yes. Overall, what are our thoughts on Elena Undone?
A classic. A Les Essentials. You gotta watch it.
It truly is a Les Essentials. Chemistry off the charts. Sex scenes off the charts. It definitely places itself in its time. So
yeah.
Understand that before you watch it. But I think it still holds
up. But that's also an important education for the baby gays of today. You know?
Agreed. Baby gays. Educate yourselves with Elena Undone.
There you go.
All right, Lee. I think it's time for our Q and Gay. Are you ready?
I am so ready.
Q and Gay. All right, our first question. Do you believe in twin flames? Yes or no?
I do.
Beautiful.
I have to, you know?
You have to.
Question two, Ellie. Did you come out later in life?
Depends what you mean by later in life, but I'm going to probably say no, because I did not come out after I was married to a man and had children. Maybe I should rephrase that to, did you come out after getting married and having children?
I'm sorry, I just read these questions.
You're welcome. All right, question number three, Lee, here we go. What's the longest you've ever made out with someone without taking a break?
Pass. No, go ahead, hit me.
Okay, I'll change this actually. Hold on. A, 3 minutes and 24 seconds. B, 30 minutes. C, an hour. Or D, 3 hours or more.
I'm going to have to go D.
Nicely.
Look, you lesbians, know, college, you just didn't have that much else to do. It's fine.
I know, lesbians, honestly, all day. Love
and
it.
All night, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Question four. What's your favorite lesbian sex scene in a movie? This is like an attack question for you, Ellie.
I know.
A, Elena Undone. B, Blue is the Warmest Color. C, Bound. Or D, Carol. But really, I'm surprised you didn't put Ammonite on here.
Ammonite is a great sex scene, but it's
I
like,
know.
To me, everything around it was too boring to me that, like, I can't, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, it's the full package for me, but it was a good sex scene. This is tricky. I think I'm going to say Bound. I really love the sex scene in Bound.
That's fair. I don't think there's a wrong answer.
No, there's so many. I mean, and to be fair, I'll probably, like, after this, text you and be like, wait, this one. But
baby birding, I mean,
yeah, please also leave us I want to just know what people's favorite sex scenes are in lesbian movies. So leave them in on our Twitter. All right. Question number five, Lee. Which character do you most identify with? Elena, Peyton, Tyler, or Tori?
Oh, wow. I feel like the real answer is Peyton, and it's not just because I was of an age where I feel like I have worn very similar outfits to the bootcut jeans with the belt and the tight tank top.
Yep.
But I think characteristics, I probably share the most with Peyton, you know?
I get it. Totally. I see that for you.
Does that age me? Oh, no.
No, I thought you might say Tori, too. I feel like with all the fun facts and the like,
I can see that.
And the research.
I feel like high school me would have answered Tori for sure.
Yeah. All right. Remember, you can give us your own answers to this episode's Q&A questions on our Twitter at Les Hangout Pod. We also, for all of our Les Essentials, have to go over our drinking game rules. As always, please drink responsibly.
Please don't die.
And make sure you live tweet us when you do.
Yes.
All right. Are you ready, Lee?
I am so ready for these.
Here are our drinking game rules. I'm very excited about these ones. Rule number one, every time they talk about twin flames. Two, every time you see a new documentary couple.
They're so cute.
So you're going to have to drink a few times for that. Three, anytime Tori says one of her beautifully researched facts. Four, anytime Peyton is swimming in her pool. Five, anytime Elena and Peyton are too obvious in front of other people.
Oh, man, that's a rough one.
Shout out to when they make out on the bridge in the park and don't think someone's going to find out. We didn't talk about that.
Oh, my God, Millie.
Drinking rule number six, take a shot during the longest makeout scene.
I feel like you've grown as a person, Ellie, for not making them waterfall that scene.
I know.
I'm proud of you.
Waterfalling for 3 minutes and 24 seconds, that would be
a lot.
A lot. Seven, anytime Elena asks Peyton about, how do you know you're gay? You know, lots of questions about being gay. And the final one, anytime Millie makes you want to throw her through a wall.
So every time Millie's on screen, drink. Got
it. So anytime Millie's on screen. Please, please, please drink responsibly.
But and tell us all about it.
I'm really, really excited for this one for all of you.
Let me hear you say, hip, we're gay.
We love hearing from you and building community, so we want to shout out some of our favorite things each episode. And I would like to personally shout out Raven, who sent us a lovely email as a baby gay who has discovered the podcast and said that they felt very, very seen by our Tangled Up in You episode with Lauren Duca. So thank you so much for reaching out, Raven. We always love hearing from you, and we're so happy that you're out and happier than ever. That makes us very happy. We also want to thank our Lesbian Jesus patrons who have been with us some of these people have been with us for a very long time. So thank you all. And our first Lesbian Jesus patron is Mark Foster,
Jess Klaus,
Tanya Ferguson,
Jacqueline Rose Nishino,
Sarah and Julia,
Carrie Ann Lawrence,
Danny Gunlock Tamora,
Brittany Ray,
Alana Rosen,
Tara Gleason,
and Lizette Stye.
And our King Princess patrons, Amy and Ellen,
Leah Henley,
Liz Chen,
Evelyn Smith,
and River Penzo. Thank you all so much. We could not keep doing this podcast without you and all of our patrons.
Remember, you can also find us on all the social medias, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Les Hangout Pod.
You can email us at leshangoutpod@gmail.com.
Or you can check out our website at leshangoutpod.com.
Wherever you listen to podcasts, make sure that you subscribe. That way you'll get new episodes as soon as they go up.
You can also subscribe to The Flame, an original podcast musical, on Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. Just search The Flame Podcast Musical and you will find it.
We also still have videos going up on our YouTube channel. Make sure that you subscribe at youtube.com/leshangoutpod to catch those.
If you want to support the podcast, you can rate and review us on iTunes. It helps other people find the podcast, and we love hearing what you have to say.
If you want to support us financially, you can join our Patreon. You get access to all sorts of cool stuff like that Discord channel or our watch parties or game nights, all sorts of fun stuff, and we have a blast. You can find it at bit.ly/lespatreon. We also have a Patreon for The Flame. So if you're interested in hearing more about the musical, seeing some behind the scenes, getting some early drops of some of the songs, you should check out that Patreon as well. You can find it at patreon.com/theflamemusical.
If you want to get some Les Hangout merch, you can get that at bit.ly/lesshop. We have 35% off the shop this week, so make sure you check that out.
If you want to follow us individually, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at LSH Foster.
And you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Ellie Brigida. With that, I'm Ellie.
And I'm Lee. And let's hang out again soon.
Let's hang out. In my dreams, I have a perfect situation. Everything in its place. All the stars are in their perfect constellations, burning up in space. Keeping me going in the right direction. Helping me see beyond the imperfections. I'm losing control. Life, nothing ever felt right, nothing made me complete. Always looking at the edge, is there anything left of the pieces of me? Keeping temptation at a safer distance, fighting against the path of least resistance.
I'm losing control.